busy. Anyone relate to, I think it's there. Anyone relate to this word?
Yes.
Yeah? It's such an interesting word. And what are some of the words that you would attach to the word busy? Like, just shout them out. What words would you attach to the word busy? It's like
work.
Kids.
Yeah.
Stress.
Tired.
Speeding.
Speeding, yeah. Somebody was in a rush to get here today. What else? Just think about this word busy. It's by the sound of it, it's not a very positive word. Would you agree? Yeah. What's crazy in this life is that if you've come to see who Jesus is and his incredible love for you, and you've put your trust in him, you've decided, man, I want to know you, Jesus, and I want to follow you in this life. What's interesting is before that happens in your life, you're probably already busy, because it's part of our culture. 2017, Hamilton, New Zealand, it's part of what defines us, unfortunately, and a lot of those negative things around that. And then you come to follow Jesus, and you find out his amazing love for you, and you respond in love for him, and you want to be yes to him, and suddenly you add more busy to your life. What does that look like? Suddenly now, when you see somebody in need, because you know of your own great need and how Jesus has met your need, you would be deeply moved to reach out to meet that person's need. And suddenly that interruption and inconvenience busies your life once more. And suddenly you realize that in following Jesus, I'm meant to give much more attention to the person that I find right in front of me to show them his love. And so it's going to fill your lives up. And even that stuff we talked about 2 weeks ago, that in our lives that there are times when we fall, when we fail, but we should get back up again and continue to follow Jesus, which is a great thought, and I think it's very true. But it can make life seem to be very full, very busy. Now, last week we were looking at another word, the word rest. Where Jesus says, come to me, you'll find rest for your soul. So what does it look like to put the two words together? Busy resting. Is that possible? That you could be busy resting? Busy resting in God's love. What would that look like? Is it possible in the busyness of life, but also in the pain of our own brokenness, and even in living a life of love that Jesus calls us to, is it possible to actually rest and enjoy the love of God? You know, sometimes it can feel like God has loved me so that I might love him and love others. And that's true. But is it also true that God has loved me, has loved you, so that you and I might be loved? I want to say that again. This is important. Because sometimes we get caught in the busy trap, even in our faith, where we go, Jesus so loved me, so I need to love him. And I need to get on showing his love to others. And we become so busy in the love God, love each other, love the lost, that we don't rest in being loved. Is it possible that God primarily loved us so that we might be loved? Not like he went, oh man, how on earth am I going to show my love to the rest of the world? And how am I ever going to receive any love back? I better go and love that guy Campbell so that he could, on my behalf, go and love some other people. Or is it quite possible that he loved me so that I might experience his love? That was the primary purpose. That he loved you, not so, oh, suddenly he's got another sales rep for God's love to go on out and do his duty. But what if he loved you because he wanted you to experience being deeply loved? See, I think that's where we find rest in the busyness. Remember the words that we read last week, Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Be connected to me," is what he's saying. "And learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Jesus didn't come to call us to himself to burden us, to make us weary, to make us more busy, more hurried. He called us to himself to find rest. So what does this word rest mean? Well, it's interesting. If you look at the word that Jesus uses here for rest, it's the idea of pausing from your toil. It's like taking a break from your labor. So the word rest isn't just in isolation. It's just not a, I just rest, like I just eternally do nothing. The idea of rest is that rest is a pause. Rest is a break. There is still life to be lived, work to be done, toil to be labored. But within that, there needs to be rest. And he's calling his disciples, his followers, that in their toil and work to find rest. There's another interesting word that goes with that, and it's this idea of intermission. You remember like going to the movies? Who remembers going to the movies with intermission? Who has never been to a movie with intermission? Yeah, look at all the young folk. Okay, so intermission is this cool thing. Because we're so busy and rushed, we can't afford any extra time at the movies. And so what they want you to do is they want you to go on in, spend up large at the beginning of the movie in the tuck shop, in the food part, enough food for the whole movie. And if you run out of popcorn, what do? Like you can't go back out and get more because you'll miss the crucial part of the movie. But they used to have intermission. The other thing is that younger folk must have better bladders because there's no restroom stops nowadays, right? But they used to have intermission. So the idea was you go to a movie, you watch the movie for maybe like 40 minutes or an hour, depending on when halfway is, and then intermission would come up on the screen and you could head on out to the rest room. And you could go and buy more popcorn and get your ice cream, and it was really cool. In fact, what it meant is you didn't worry about arriving on time. You didn't have to arrive early to get your food. You would arrive on time, go to the movie, and during the intermission, you would take a break from the movie and you would go and buy your stuff. It's interesting that Jesus is calling us to take intermission, to take a rest, to pause midway, to have a rest, grab ice cream and popcorn, as it were. We need to find rest. We need to be those who draw aside, who pause, who take intermissions regularly to rest in God's love. Rest is not the absence of work or toil, but it's the pause that empowers us and enables us to continue on with the good work God has for us. And it's also understand that he ultimately is the one who does and completes the work. That was this idea that God gave in this great gift to Israel of Sabbath. And we should still today, in a sense, have Sabbath as a rhythm in our lives. It's this gift where we take time to pause and rest, we take intermission, and we put our tools down, as it were, from work, and we have a space of time where we don't work, we rest. But in the resting, what's happening and what would happen for Israel is we trust God. We go, "God, you've got this." Like how often, you know, like your day off and the phone goes and you've got to go there because what if it's work? What if it doesn't get done today? What if you don't take that call? What if somebody's like dying and you didn't take the call? What if something's broken and it's causing a mess and you didn't take the call? So we have to take the call, don't we? 7 days a week we take the call. Because if we don't, the world falls apart. Because God's not in control. See, the idea of Sabbath was you put your tools down and you trust God for that day. And you go, "God, you've got this. I will rest." Because ultimately, you are about the work. And translate that into our lives of faith. as we seek to do the works he's planned for us in advance to do so we'd be his masterpiece, he's going, even in that, I'm still the one doing the work. I'm still completing the work. You can rest in me. You can rest. There's this amazing day in the life of Jesus. You find in Mark 6, you might want to grab your Bible and have a look there. And if somebody needs a Bible, Jeremy's at the back with Bibles. So if you want a Bible, we're going to be in Mark 6 working our way through. So if you need a Bible, throw your hand up and Jeremy will get you one. But Mark 6 is this incredibly busy day in the life of Jesus. It's a traumatic day too. It's the day on which he gets the news that his cousin John has died. John the Baptist has been beheaded. It's not a good day. And so Jesus is grieving the loss of a friend and a cousin and the one who was the one who announced the coming of Jesus. It's a day in which his followers are incredibly busy. Some look at the stories that happen in Mark 6 and you can see that it's like a picture of what God was like in providing in the desert for Israel, the manna in the desert. And others would see it that it's a chapter that's full of the signs of Jesus' power as the Son of God. And certainly that's how John's gospel paints it. But in Mark's gospel, it's interesting. In Mark's gospel, there's a different focus. It seems to be a focus on the relationships at hand between Jesus and his followers. So in Mark 6, verse 30, let's just read there. A day about being busy resting. Verse 30, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. You see, what had happened is the disciples had just returned from being on mission. And they'd been out working miracles and speaking about the kingdom, and they were doing this amazing work that Jesus sent them to do. And they'd come back and they were having their like debrief time with Jesus. But as they're having this debrief, people keep coming to Jesus, wanting Jesus. They want Jesus to heal them. They want Jesus to accept them. They want Jesus to speak to them. And they keep interrupting during this day. And this is also the day that Jesus got the news that John, his cousin, has been beheaded. And so while all this is going on, Jesus suddenly stops and he says to his disciples, you need to come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Maybe that's you. Maybe Jesus is going, man, that's great all that you're doing right now. You're going 100 miles an hour, but I want, come with me. Let's go to a quiet place and get some rest right now. You're so busy, you haven't even eaten today. Come and rest with me. And so he takes them to rest. Verse 32. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. So this sounds great. It's like they'll be so busy, they're going to go and have a retreat with Jesus. They're out on the yacht and they're cruising off to a quiet bay and they're just going to be able to chill for the day, finally eat some food, get some sleep, and maybe have Jesus speak to them some encouraging words. That'd be beautiful, wouldn't it? And here's what happens. Verse 33. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, do you see the picture? So the disciples are like, oh, finally, we get to rest. And we get some one-on-one with Jesus. And we're in the yacht. You know, Steve, you'd love that. You're just cruising in the yacht there. It's like you're in your happy place, and you arrive in this quiet bay, and you sort of, as it bumps up on the shore, everybody looks on up, and there is about 10,000 people. True. It says there's 5,000 men. So there's families there. It could be 7,000, could be 10,000 people are on this hillside and spread out right down to the bay. And they're not just all chilling out, resting, and going, come on, disciples, Jesus, come rest with us. They're eagerly focused, attention. There's Jesus. He's about to get out of the boat and he's going to come and do his thing. And we can't wait for him to heal my son, or we can't wait to see him heal somebody else's son. So there's people that are there for entertainment and people that are there in desperate need. Some are there because they long to hear his refreshing and encouraging words, words of hope. So Jesus lands, verse 34, when Jesus landed and saw the crowd, a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. You see Jesus? He's tired too. And his heart is heavy with the loss of John. And he also wants some time with his disciples because he sees their need and he sees them exhausted and hungry. But he looks up and he sees the crowd. And he says they're like sheep without a shepherd. In Matthew's account, he says that of these sheep, that they're harassed and helpless. And the word literally means that they're skinned and that they're cast. It's actually quite horrific when you think about it. He's going, it's like the sheep that have had the skin ripped off them. And they're like sheep that are cast. You know what it's like when a sheep gets cast? I remember as a kid, I grew up on a sheep farm and go down with Dad during lambing time, and there would be a sheep having trouble with lambing, and it would have got cast. It would have too much wool maybe on. It's winter and it's wet. It's also pregnant, and it would get on its side or on its back, and it couldn't get back on its feet. No matter what, there was no way, no matter how much it moves in the wet grass, it's never going to get on its feet. It will thrash around like that till it dies. And there's no shepherd to pick it up. It'll die. And it's like Jesus saying, man, they're like sheep. They're harassed and helpless. They're like, it's as if they've been skinned alive. It's like they're cast, and if there's no shepherd, they're dead. They need a shepherd to come and put them back on their feet again. And so what does Jesus do when he sees the crowd? It says, so he began to teach them many things. So he doesn't start with doing all the miracles. He starts with speaking to them. He's teaching them. I wonder what he taught them. I wonder what it was. It's like Jesus, you know, later on is going to have a meal with them, but the first thing he wants to give them is food. Food of word, food from his Father. So he starts to teach them. But I want you to see this thing, that when Jesus saw them, he was moved with compassion. There's a turning that went on inside Jesus. We would call it a turning of the stomach, literally. That's what the word compassion means. It means his stomach, his gut, his inner parts. And it came over time to mean like the place within the human being that sits the tender compassions, the mercies. And same within Jesus, his stomach turned like with an aching pain as he saw these needy people who were lost. They'd lost hope. They were stressed with life, burdened with brokenness. And his heart just turned within him. And so all he could do is go, I just have to meet that need. So he teaches them. It's interesting that for Jesus and the disciples on this day when they were trying to draw aside and rest, that they end up back busy again. And one of the reasons is there's always going to be good that needs to be done. And there's always going to be need that needs to be met. And they were just bumping into it all over again. And it's interesting that Jesus' life and the call on his followers was to be those who do good and meet needs. And so they do. And Jesus is deeply moved by the needs of others. We talk about that sometimes around here, about this word compassion. It's one of our values of CBC. And this is how we would phrase it, is that compassion is to be deeply moved by the heart of God to give our lives for the last, the least, and the lost. That's who we need to be. People who, when we see need, we're deeply moved by God's heart to give our lives for the last, least, and lost. But I want you to see in the story something else. That even as they get busy, and Jesus is now busy with 10,000 people and his disciples with him, and that he's desperately longing to get away to a quiet place to be with his Father, and he's wanting his disciples to get space to be able to recoup and rest, there's some other resting that's going on in the busyness. And that's it. Jesus is resting in his Father, and he wants his disciples to rest in him. Let's just read on. Verse 35. By this time it was late in the day. So his disciples came to him. They said, this is a remote place, And it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. So the disciples are being compassionate, aren't they? They see the crowd and they go, man, everybody here is going to faint on the way home. Jesus, we better send them off now before they faint here. Let's send them off to get some food, get on home. But I can't help but think that the disciples maybe are just going like, we're over this. And we are hungry. Because do you remember at the beginning of the day, the disciples hadn't had time to eat. They hadn't had time to eat. They still haven't had time to eat. And now they're here and there's this whole crowd who haven't had time to eat. And they're just going, what the heck? We just are so hungry right now and exhausted. Jesus, send them away. Send them away. And I sort of think that they're right. Because sometimes we're so busy, we don't care for our own needs. And maybe we do need to say no. Or not. It's hard to know. For Jesus, this is what he said. But he answered the disciples, you give them something to eat. Like, is he kidding? Like, they haven't had time to eat, and they obviously aren't carrying their lunch with them. And now he wants them to feed 10,000. They said to him, that would take more than half a year's wages. Like, I don't know what that is, but maybe like equivalent today to 20, 30,000. That'd be maybe $3 to $4 a head. So it's a relevant figure. And then they say to Jesus, are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? See, it's interesting because the disciples are confused by this because they've been told, come with me, rest a while. Jesus takes them to another bay and now they're busier than ever. They're still hungry. And actually, back before he sent them on mission, he told them not to take any bread with them. So they still haven't got any bread on them because they've just come back from mission where they were told not to carry bread. And now he's saying, you give bread to the crowd? It's like Jesus puts them in this spot and they're going, go figure, what are we meant to do? So Jesus says to them in verse 38, how many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found out, so you imagine they go through the crowd and they're doing like taking up the offering of food for lunch and they come up with 5 loaves out of the whole crowd. It's like, it's not a good Sunday. And they get 2 fish. And John tells us that it's actually just from one little boy's lunch. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Remember, Jesus said they were like sheep without a shepherd. And then he commands to get them all to sit down on the green grass. I can tell you that the disciples know something of what's going on. Psalm 23, which they would have known well, Psalm of David, says this, the Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. Verse 5, you prepare a table before me. You see what Jesus is doing? The sheep without a shepherd, I will be the shepherd. I will sit them down in green pastures. I'll put a table before them. And he does. Look at verse 41. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. Most likely this was his prayer, a common prayer even today amongst the Jews would be this. Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the world who brings forth bread from the earth. You imagine this crowd all just saying amen to that and then just going, where's the food? And then it says this, then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to all the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them and they all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. Like, it's a miracle, isn't it? It's like, I don't know, like, you can try and explain it however you like, but I can't get any way around it other than going like, that's impossible. But if it's true, then Jesus is God. And that's what I believe. So he does this amazing miracle, and we can get absorbed into the miracle, but I want us to see the real miracles that are going on. Look at verse 45. So everyone's eaten, everyone's satisfied. Even the disciples probably have finally had something to eat. And so they'd be happy about that. They're probably high-fiving over the great miracle that's happened. It says this in verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. This is really forceful language. So Jesus has just fed the crowd and they're all high-fiving, the disciples thinking this is great, none are full, and everyone's happy. And when Jesus, at the start of verse 45, says immediately Jesus made his disciples get in the boat, he's actually commanding them. He's going, right, you guys, right now, in the boat, get going. It's that forceful. He's not messing around. He's going, we're done here. You need to go right now. But Jesus, don't we need to finish packing up? What do we do with the baskets? Do we give them to people to take home as like for lunch tomorrow? Like, just get in the boat and go now. But Jesus, it's all right, just relax. What are you going to do now with the people? Doesn't matter. I don't care what you think right now other than you get in the boat and you go now. He's very direct with them, which is sort of weird. It's like he wants them in the boat on the lake right now. So they all get in the boat and they go off on the boat. And most of them are fishermen, so they're comfortable with that. They know the lake. They know how to use the boat. They're going on the lake on the boat. Jesus dismisses the crowd and says, you guys, you're all full now, satisfied, you've got energy. Go on home. We've had a good day. You go home. And then Jesus goes on the mountainside to pray. This has been a long day for Jesus. And all day he's been carrying some weight, the weight of the loss of his friend and cousin, John. And I think finally Jesus gets to go and grieve. He goes to the mountainside and he's with his father. And he grieves. Man, the disciples have just witnessed an amazing miracle. They've seen the hunger of the people. They've seen that. They've been concerned about their own hunger. And then they've been confronted with their inability to meet the hunger of anybody present. But they've seen that Jesus can do the impossible and he can feed a hungry crowd till they're satisfied. That's been a pretty cool day. So they're on the oars and they're rowing out into the lake, and then maybe they're putting the sail up and they're getting ready to have a nice, cruisy, restful time on the lake. Get around to another quiet bay. Jesus is obviously going to go and pray up there and come down the other side and meet us in the bay, and we'll finally get the rest that Jesus invited us into. Verse 47. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake. This is about 5 km offshore. And he, Jesus, was alone on the land. He saw the disciples. So imagine Jesus on this hillside and he's looking down across the lake, and then out in the middle he can see this little boat. And he sees the disciples straining at the oars. He must have supervision to see that far. But remember, he is God, so he knows what's going on. He sees that the disciples are straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Who sent them on the lake?
Jesus.
And he is very forceful with that. Now, just think about this. So if Jesus is the one who can feed that crowd of people with a small boy's lunch, do you think Jesus knows what's out on the lake? Yeah. He knows there's a storm coming. He sent the disciples into the storm. He did that. He said, you guys get in the boat and get on out there. And they're thinking, finally we get rest. And what are they doing? They're busy straining at the oars. And based on the timeline of the Gospels, they're doing it for about 8 hours. They're fearful. Like it's not like it's going to capsize. It's just a strong wind. And they're getting nowhere in the middle of the lake. And this is where Jesus wanted them to be. And I don't know how you reconcile that into life, but there could be times when Jesus says, I want you to go into the storm. I'm not inviting you to a life of calm lakes, blue skies, kick back, get a suntan. Like sometimes in this life, where you're going to arrive with me, Jesus says, there's going to be a crowd waiting at the shore, and they're going to need our attention all day. And other times with me, you're going to feel a bit alone, but I'm still really with you, but you're going to feel alone. You're going to feel like you're in a storm, and that's okay. Because I'm with you there too. It says this in verse 48, the second half. Shortly after dawn, so maybe around 6 a.m., he went out to them, walking on the lake. So once again, we're like, whoa, he's just fed all those people. Now he's walking on water. It's an amazing story. And it's in the storm, like there's a strong wind, and they can't even row against it. Like there's all of them, like all 12 of them, muscly guys, just like doing their rowing, and they can't get anywhere. And Jesus, he just gets there. Like he just walks there. I don't know what that looked like. It could be quite cool. Maybe it's like all like fog machine misty, and he's just like gliding. I don't know, but he walks on water. And we marvel at that, but we miss what the next little phrase says. He was about to pass them by. So it doesn't kind of make sense because you've got this boat here and these guys are all working hard in the storm and they're already exhausted from a long, hard day that's come at the end of a whole mission trip and they're stuffed and they're fighting it and they're wondering, why did Jesus send us out here? And yet over here's Jesus and he's coming on cruising on by and he's like as if he's going to just go right past them. He's just going to, as if he's going to go pass by. I read something interesting this week that the phrase there, he's going to pass them by, in the Greek when it's like translated through is the same idea that it carries in the Old Testament when Moses wanted to see the glory of God. And God said to him on Sinai, he said, go and hop in that hole in the rock and I'm going to come along and put my hand over you and I'm going to pass by and then you'll be able to look and see my glory, the back of me. And that's the day that God said to him, here's my glory, I'm gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in love. The picture, they would say, is the same as God passing by Moses on Sinai and Moses getting a glimpse of God's glory. Jesus is passing by the disciples and they're getting a glimpse of his glory. And remember what his glory was back in Exodus? The Lord is compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, rich in love. So he goes to pass them by, verse 49. But when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. Well, wouldn't you? I mean, I would. And they cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. They were terrified. Their reaction was not the reaction that we would hope the story would have. We're told in one of the other Gospels that that's the point when Peter says, if that's really you, Jesus, tell me to come on out and I'll come on out. And he does the whole walk on the water and then almost drown thing and Jesus rescues him and they jump in the boat. That's the same story. But it says this in verse 50, immediately he spoke to them and he said, take courage, it is I. He's saying, don't be afraid, it's I. This is the glory you're seeing of the one who's gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, rich in love. It's me, you don't have to be afraid of me. We don't have to be afraid of Jesus. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down, and they were completely amazed. For they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. This is the gem, this is the gold of Mark 6, right here. For they had not understood about the loaves. I want you to think about this. Start of the story. Who's hungry? The disciples. They haven't had time to eat. Then you got this whole crowd, and Jesus feeds the whole crowd, including the disciples. Now they're in a boat. What has the boat and them rowing for 8 hours in the boat and Jesus walking on the water got to do with bread? It sort of doesn't make sense, does it? It should be more like, you know, have courage. It's me. I'm the walk on water guy who's got power over the storm. Trust the power over the storm guy. That's not what's recorded here. It's saying, oh, the thing they missed was not the storm walking on water thing. They missed the bread. They missed the fact that Jesus knows their busyness and their hunger and their need. And he is present to satisfy them. and that they can, in the busyness, rest in him. They hadn't understood that he's the shepherd of sheep who feels skinned alive and cast down. They hadn't understood the bread. It says that their hearts were hardened. The word there means that they were like calloused. They were petrified like stones. They didn't understand the main lesson of the day, the lesson of the loaves. They ended the day not with empty stomachs, but with hard hearts, because they did not yet understand who it was who loved them, cared for them, the one who was the shepherd of their souls. There's a massive lesson there for us. Like when life is busy and it's so full, and we're just, and even in good stuff, good things sometimes fill our lives. Jesus is actually sending us into some of the storms, and he's putting need in front of us that he wants us to meet. But in the whole way, he's going, I'm here, I'm connected to you, I'm present with you, I deeply love you. Are you resting? Are you pausing? Are you taking intermission? Are you taking breaks? Are you realizing that I'm here and reaching out to me, receiving from me? There's another great miracle I don't want us to miss here, because I think it connects so strongly, and I would see it as the greatest miracle of the day. It's not Jesus taking a small boy's lunch and turning it into a feast for 10,000. And it's not him strolling across the waves, you know, like he's on a footpath while his disciples work hard against the oars. And you know what? It's not the fact that he can just turn wind on and off, you know, like a switch. The greatest miracle is this, that when Jesus sees need, his stomach turns. That when Jesus sees the need of the crowd, he has compassion. When Jesus sees the need of his disciples, he has compassion. When Jesus sees you and I and our need, he has compassion. When he sees us like sheep without a shepherd, his stomach turns. And he acts to meet our need. He so loved the disciples and the crowd that he experiences a turning of his heart. He turns towards them and their need. It's interesting that it's in stark contrast to the disciples. The heart of Jesus is soft. Remember what I said to Matthew at the beginning? Come learn from me, from gentle and humble of heart. He doesn't have a hard heart. He has a soft heart. He saw the disciples overwhelmed with the crowds and tired from many days of kingdom work, and he invites them to come with me. By yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. He looks upon a crowd of people who are weary and burdened, harassed, helpless, feeling skinned alive and cast down, sheep with no shepherd, and he meets their need by teaching them many things. I can't help but think he's there on the hillside and he's saying to them, hey, all you guys, you've walked so far to see me. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart. You'll find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Man, imagine sitting in the crowd and just hearing that when you are helpless and harassed. He saw men and women, boys and girls, all needing to walk a long trek home on empty stomachs, and he filled their stomachs with bread and fish. But get this, he also saw his disciples so concerned over their own hunger that he provides them with a soul food story that they would never forget. And in years to come, the events of this day would continue to fill their hearts. Think about that. For the rest of the disciples' lives, whenever they're a little bit hungry, whether in soul or physically, they'd remember this day. This day would continue to satisfy them. Jesus looked down from the mountain and he saw men he loved straining at the oars, doing battle with the storm that he sent them into. And he came down and he walked out to meet them. He calmed the waves and he calmed their souls and he brought them rest. Not just rest in that moment, but also a rest that in time would never leave them as they would grow to rest in him. Look at verse 53. When they crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and they anchored there. It's interesting, there's another miracle here John mentions. He says that immediately when Jesus got into the boat, they were there. They just got to their destination. Verse 54. Can't believe this. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. It's like, you got to be kidding. Like, think about the day. And then overnight, and they land at another place. Think about the disciples. Like, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout the whole region and they carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, in villages, towns, or countrysides, they placed the sick in the agoras. Do you see that? Marketplace. That's the word agora. That's the Greek word for here. I think it's cool. It's like the marketplace was a place where Jesus met people. I love that. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. Man, isn't it crazy that at the end of this crazy, you know, 24 hours, that they still land on another beach with another crowd who need Jesus? Coming to Jesus brings us rest, but it doesn't take away the busyness. And he's never promised it would. But somehow we need to get busy resting. Jesus would say to us today in our busyness, he would say, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. He would say, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Somehow we've got to learn in the busyness to take moments to find food and rest for our souls. And that's what I want us to do right now. So as we end, I want to encourage you. There's two kinds of people here, okay? And so I'm going to go with the can't empty your head of busyness people first. So you know, some of you are people who can just like switch off and zone on in on Jesus in a moment. You know who you are? Like, you're just those people who can do that. There's a whole bunch of you here who your brain has already been going the whole time and not on what I've been talking about. You're just going on other stuff. I'm talking to you first, okay? So in a moment, we're going to have a quiet moment. And for the busy brainers, you're going to hate it because your brain's just going to go all over the place. It's going to be going like, what am I having for lunch? And what time is he going to finish? And it's just a whole lot of things are going on, as well as big things. Okay, so I'm talking to you first. For some of us, it's a struggle to pause and take intermission. So I'm going to invite you to pause and take intermission now, but I'm going to give you something to think about that's not deep and meaningful in the sense of what I'm going to ask the reflective people to do later. This is for you who are busy brainers, okay? I'm going to give you something to busy your brain with, all right? So though you don't have work to do in your hands right now and you're not at your desk or in your meeting, your mind is always busy working, worrying, wrestling with stuff. Some of you are like that. I'm like that. In these next moments, I want to ask you not just to suddenly shut all that down, because some of you can't. So I'm going to suggest that you use this moment to get busy thinking about this question. So here's the question. How, when, and where this week can I take some time to reconnect with Jesus and rest in him? I want you to give that serious thought, okay? And I've just given you some suggestions there, okay? These are some things that you could think to do, but it's really just to get you thinking. In these next moments, I want you to be thinking about how, when, and where could you actually rest with Jesus? Like for example, some two-minute breads for a daily meal. It's like, you know, two-minute noodles, it doesn't take long. Well, imagine this, if you just went, hey, this week, when I sit down for breakfast, I'm going to also sit down to some daily bread. I'm going to sit down to some moments with Jesus where there's a moment of quiet, maybe. Maybe there's a moment of reading his word. Maybe a moment of conversation with him, and then some more quiet to listen to him. But what would it look like to just go, Jesus, this is crazy life right now for me, but I do stop to eat, so why don't I add to my diet some rest right now. You could do that, but this is just a prompt. Another one could be an alarm beep, intermission. Okay, so think of the restroom break, you know, like at the movies. Well, in most of our rhythms of life with work, we have breaks, don't we? Like it could be a morning tea break, a lunchtime break, an afternoon tea break. You could have it like every 3 hours, or maybe it's at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Maybe that's the schedule of your breaks anyway. You just have your phone or your watch beep at those moments. And just let the beep be the beep to go, oh, yeah, in this moment. Am I pausing to be present right now and acknowledge that Jesus is right with me and I'm not going to miss the moment? Might be as simple as that. Might be going, Jesus, this is how my last 3 hours have gone. Not sure how the next three will go, but thank you that you're with me. I don't know what that would look like for you. Could be this, it could be like one moment a week. It might be an evening, comfy chair, storybook date. You know, so it's in other words, you go, I'm going to have a date with Jesus Thursday nights. I'm going to find that comfy chair and I'm going to pick up his book, maybe the Gospel of Mark. And I'm going to start to read Jesus' story. I'm going to rest. It was interesting for me yesterday morning. I was taking Levi to football and I needed to drop him at St. Paul's at just before 7:30, but his game wasn't till 8:30. So I took a book I'm reading at the moment called Good and Beautiful God, and it's talking about our relationship with Jesus and with his Father, and I've just been really encouraged by it. So what I did was I did this. I thought, you know what? It's like in the busyness of the day, I could take Levi and I could race back to home, pick up Lorraine, and we could be back for kickoff. And then it was like, nah, I'll just rest. That's what I actually thought. And so I went, dropped Levi off at football over at St. Paul's, shot down to Five Crossroads for a coffee, get me awake, and then I pulled out my Good and Beautiful God book to direct my thoughts to Jesus. And I read that for about 40 minutes there. Do you know what the chapter was about? The sickness of being in a hurry. Isn't that cool? Like, so when I drew aside, Jesus went, oh, you've been thinking about all the stuff for everybody else? What about you? I got a chapter for you by this guy called James, and he's going to tell you to stop hurrying in the busyness. And so I read that yesterday, and it impacted me greatly as he talked about Jesus' perspective on life and how that Jesus was unhurried in all his busyness. And then he talked about some practical things. So you know what happened this morning? I was busy. I got up early this morning, and I'm doing my final prep for this morning and making sure everything's going to work on my iPad, and I'm printing stuff off for the guys at the desk, but then realizing again that I don't have any paper to print at home, so I'm thinking I'm going to have to get in here early to print. And then I get out to my van and realize I've got a trailer on the back that's due to be delivered back this morning, so I then had to take the trailer back to where it belonged to then get in here early enough to print stuff off for the guys at the back. So that's busy, right? Because of what I read yesterday, I did that busyness this morning without a hurry. And it's like, I still had to do all the same things in the same time frame, but Jesus changed a perspective in there to go, just rest. And you know what I did? I did this thing the guy said in the book. He says, we're so not present living in the moment. We're thinking, we're looking at the Speedo, the speeding thing, looking at the Speedo, and we're thinking, I've got to get there in time to get the photocopying done for the guys at the desk. So that's the busy mode, right? And he said, why don't you just do what you need to do, but within the time constraints you have, and don't worry about whether you get it done or not. Just do what's present. And while you're doing it, be present to what's around you. So this is what I did. I dropped the trailer off, and I went, man, I'm probably not going to make it. And then I went, oh, you know what? I'm going to drive from there to here at 50 k's per hour, because that's the law. And while I'm doing that, it's slow enough to actually go, well, the sun's just sort of coming through the clouds and that's cool. And I did exactly what this book had said, to pause and just be in the moment and let God, you know, speak to me and be present in what I saw. And I'm a busy brain guy. And I rested this morning as I drove here. You can find rest for your soul in the busyness. So, for you guys who are busy brainers, think about this question in the next couple of minutes and how, where, and when might you find rest this week? Okay, for you other contemplative bunch, And I know that's big, broad categories I'm talking, but if you're somebody who can just focus on in, this is what I'd encourage from you right now. The word soon from Matthew are going to come up on screen again as invitation to come and rest. And I would suggest that you just read those words on screen and then just meditate on them. Allow Jesus to speak into your soul words of rest right now. These are some of his words. He would say, I'm gentle and humble in heart. He desires and is able to lighten your load. He would say, I can strengthen you and relieve the weight of your burdens. I will remain connected to you in your hunger and in the storm. What would Jesus say to you today as he would say, come and rest? And so just if you can put that Matthew passage up. And this is how we're going to end today, is just to pause. Think about how you will rest this week. Or maybe do some resting right now. Just be saying, Jesus, what would you say to me today in these words? What do you want me to know today from your word? What's the bread that you already have for me to eat today? Let's not be those who don't understand the loaves. Jesus is present. He will feed our hunger. He will calm the storms. He's present with us today, for he deeply loves us. Lord, just in these moments, as we would pause in quiet, would you speak to our hearts? Lord, just speak to us of how this week we could rest in you and even speak to us through these words on screen right now. May we receive this invitation to come and to find rest for our souls in you.